Welcome, everyone, and thank you for attending today's kickoff event for the Leaders and Innovators series here at Lawrence Technological University. I'm Edward Cardenas, the new media and technology reporter here at WWJ News Radio 950. And I'd like to thank everybody for, obviously, we're here to talk about energizing your business. And hopefully everybody had enough coffee and get re-energized, especially if you were up last night watching the Tigers game. I don't know if we'll need more re-energizing or if the Tigers might need that a little bit. But first, I'd like to we'd like to thank our host and partner here for today, Lawrence Technological University. We really appreciate them opening up here, their facilities here to have this, to be able to invite everybody here to come onto campus, see the great things that are going on here at Lawrence Tech, and obviously to hold us in this wonderful venue here at Lawrence Tech. We also like to thank our sponsors today: AAA, Comerica Bank, Raymond James of Birmingham, and Walker Miller Energy Services. And of course, most importantly, we'd like to thank our speakers who took time out of their busy schedules to come here and talk a little bit about energy. And we have, starting here, Vicki Campbell, Director of Energy Efficiency Programs at DTE Energy. We've got Ford Cotton, Engineering Manager at LaFontaine Automotive Group. Joe Reiser?
You got it.
Fantastic. Architect here at LTU. So you see these great facilities. Thank this gentleman. And also Melanie Steele, who is sitting in here today for Carla Walker Miller. She is VP at Walker Miller Energy Services, and as you can see, they have a nice table right over here. So first off, I'd like to have our panelists just take a few moments just kind of to introduce themselves and tell them a little bit about their role within their business and also how that they help make the work with energy efficiency. And I guess if we could just start out over here with Joe.
Well, let me start by saying, you hearing me all right with this? Okay, I can't tell from up here. All right, well, let me say I'm happy to see you all here this morning, and thank you for coming, and it's a pleasure here to share some thoughts with you. I'm Joe Reiser, and I am the university architect here at Lawrence Tech, and I've been on the campus since about 1998, starting with this building here. When I think about how far we have come in the energy area, I think about the difference between this building and the two that we're building now on the campus, one that's started and one that's about to start with the groundbreaking tomorrow. So I get involved in all of those kinds of major projects along with the largest area we have to contend with, and that's the area of rehabilitation or implementation periodically on existing buildings.
Fantastic. And Vicki, obviously with DTE, you provide our energy, but here you're also with the energy efficiency programs. Tell us a little bit about your role.
Sure, and good morning to everyone. I don't think I have to tell you who DTE Energy is, except for maybe to remind you that we're both the electric and the gas company here throughout Michigan. And we do have energy efficiency programs for industrial, commercial, and residential customers. The state of Michigan passed comprehensive energy legislation back in 2008, so we've had some pretty robust programs since then, and it looks like they're going to continue into the future. We'll always find out what happens in Lansing. We also have a group of energy engineers that are embedded with some of our largest customers, and we've done that for about 15 or 20 years. And I know I often am asked, wait a minute, you sell energy. Why are you working with your customers to use less? And it does sound kind of crazy, right? But it makes sense because obviously customers want to use less. We don't want energy waste. And if we're able to delay the building of power plants, we're saving money for all of our customers. And that's what we're trying to do.
Thank you. Ford, obviously, you're here with the automotive company. You help power and you help drive people from point A to B. But tell us a little bit about what unique things that you've done over there at LaFontaine.
Well, Ed, and good morning, all you folks. We have a unique dealership. It's the second car dealership in the nation and the first GM dealership to be LEED certified, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. We achieved the gold certification, and there are four levels, much like the Olympics: bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. Now, we probably would have achieved platinum, except we have a lot of lights over cars that are on display out in the area, and they're not over anybody's work area, so they're not practical, perhaps. But the previous Cadillac, Buick, GMC, and at that time Pontiac store had conventional heating and cooling, and I told Ed earlier that the the utility bills, I'm sorry, DTE, the utility bills were astronomical. They're still high. But so when they designed the new building, they decided to go with geothermal heating and cooling. And that made a big, big difference in the utility costs. Plus, it got us into the running for the LEED certification. And as we spend some time later on, I can tell you about some of the other aspects of the building. It's called the Green Store, but people drive up and down M59 trying to find a green building. Well, it's not really green, but it's really green in terms of energy conservation.
And Melanie, tell us a little bit about Walker Miller Energy Services.
Sure. Welcome to this. I'm really honored to be in this panel, by the way. Thank you. Walker Miller Energy Services is a 14-year-old business. We just celebrated our 14th anniversary in August. We're a unique company because when we started in the transmission and distribution. We sold a lot of products. In 2008, as that legislation was coming to close, we realized that the business needs to shift, as well as when the economy was also shifting. We realized that we needed to kind of do a makeover, a business makeover. And we did, we stepped into the energy optimization business. DTE took a chance on us. We're really grateful for that, because that helped us kind of, it was our pivot point to allow us to do a lot of the design and optimization for DTE Energy, and now we also do that for Consumers Energy. And this year, we've helped hundreds of small businesses save money and save energy by doing a lot of the direct install, lighting retrofit, motor retrofit for those small businesses in the gas stations, the mom and pop stores, the liquor. Oh gosh, I said liquor store. Yes, we have plenty of those, and they also need help. They're small businesses, and they need help, and we help those companies become more energy efficient. On the residential side, we also help them weatherize their homes, perform energy audits. So we do a lot of things from the residential all the way down to the utility level to help customers save money and save energy.
Fantastic. Now, obviously, today we'd like to have it as a free-flowing, open conversation back and forth. So you as consumers and business leaders within the community be able to ask questions of these panelists to pick their brains. So I'll start off with a question, but if you want to take a few moments, think of some questions, and I'll head out into the crowd a la Phil Donahue for those folks that might remember and take your questions. But yeah, I guess first off, I'd like to pose a question to the panel. You know, what are some of the biggest challenges when it comes to energy efficiency and businesses taking that step to, you know, to either retrofit or redesign some of their facilities? And please feel free, you know, jump in.
I'll jump in since we're kind of fresh on that experience. The hardest thing is that it's an invisible investment, as I was telling Vicky earlier, because you can't see insulation. You know, you don't see the controls. Nobody sees the new furnace that got installed. So it's a really hard buy-in for most times. And it's really good to have educated consumers that make those decisions within facility management or in houses, you know, just having that good, really understanding for the business buy-in to do more insulation and to replace your furnace.
The issue of existing buildings is a huge problem. I'm faced with it here in the campus all the time. Our buildings started out here in a campus in 1955. They are not energy efficient. Engineering building is an energy hog. And what can we do about it? The issue we're faced with, and I imagine that everyone out there is faced with, is what to do, how to do it right, and how much is it going to cost to do it? And a part of that is there a payback to doing it? Because we can't afford to do it just because it's God's work. I mean, we'd like to. When we can afford to, we'll do that. But for the most part, you're looking for a payback. It used to be if you had a payback in 7 years, that was pretty good. Now everyone wants instantaneous feedback and say, can I get payback in 2 or 3 years or less? And probably not. Add to that the problem of when you try to get at what to do, it's doing it right. Now, I'll give you just an example. Residential type construction, and I've seen this, and it's dangerous. You know, you worry about energy efficiency, so you want to add insulation. So you can go to Home Depot and you can buy regular insulation, bad insulation. You can buy it with a vapor barrier or without. When you put it in, you got to worry about, is it on the vapor barrier on the top or on the bottom or on the inside or the outside? Because if you put it in the wrong place, you will save energy, but you will create a spot where condensation can occur in a wall or in a ceiling and develop mold. So you can't just add insulation because that's a good thing to do. You have to know how to add insulation so that solving one problem doesn't cause another and add to more cost in the future trying to retrofit to get rid of mold.
Yeah, and I would agree with both the earlier comments that we do have to have education and awareness of what you can do to be more efficient. And it's hard. People are running their businesses and they're not thinking about efficiency. So we really need to break through. And for us at DT Energy, we think it's important that everybody throughout the supply chain understand it. And I think that gets back to making sure that it's installed correctly. Because some of this is new technology and it may not work exactly the same way as the older technology. And then as to the upfront cost, a piece of efficient equipment oftentimes is more expensive than something that's less efficient. And that's why we have the rebates and incentives to bring that cost down so that you can get your payback. And what we are seeing is people want it like a 3-year payback. So we're hoping that businesses will prioritize energy efficiency along with all the other investments they're making in their business because it will save them long term.
Comment I would make, thinking about the 7-year potential payback, that was what was predicted when LaFontaine built a building 6 years ago. In about 3 years, the geothermal system paid for itself. So it happened a lot sooner than was, which is great, you know, that's better than the reverse. The other thought that I had, though, if you think about our building was built 6 years ago and much of the energy efficiency technology that was applied was current. 6 years is a long time in this business, and there are a number of things that the challenge for us is, what do we do next? Mm-hmm. We installed T5 fluorescence in the ceiling because I was talking with the guys from Walker Miller that LEDs were cost prohibitive at the time. Prices come down, so they pay for themselves, and they last nearly forever. Mm-hmm. So,
great. Any questions from the audience?
My question would be about LaFontaine. You mentioned the payoff is about 3 years with the geothermal, but didn't you also do wind turbines there and solar panels?
We don't have solar panels. That was part of the original design proposal, but it wasn't adopted. But we do have one windmill, and I'll apologize. It doesn't have a very glamorous role. It generates the power that runs the sludge grinder pumps because we have a car wash that recycles 85% of its water. Well, when you recycle 85% of the water, the sludge does build up. So when I first started, they told me that the windmill actually generated the electricity to pump the water that we collect from runoff from the parking lot roof to irrigate the landscape. But that water does irrigate the landscape, but the windmill doesn't pump it.
So sometimes how you make the sausage isn't always as pretty as the final product. But
when I think of geothermal, it reminds me of a slight story for you. When we built the Student Services Center, we put geothermal wells in. We put 87 wells in on a prediction from a sample well that it would meet almost half of our load for heating or cooling in each of the respective seasons. And that sample well wasn't enough, and we ended up having to add 33 wells to get to the temperature difference that we needed to service for heating and cooling. When we put those first wells in, we did them at one cost. Okay, I don't remember the numbers, or I'd share them with you. It's just been too long. But it was an affordable with a predicted 7-year payback. Okay. When we went to add the 33 wells, a problem had occurred. Two things. First of all, the technology in a 2-year period had changed. We went from a single line tube closed system to a concentric tube design. Not a problem. More efficient, but also more costly, first cost. Now, that sounded good till we went to put them in, but in the meantime, the rules changed. When we put the first system in, it was looked at by the municipalities and code officials and government in general, city and state, as part of a mechanical system. It's a closed loop. Nothing goes outside the system. Nothing goes into the ground. So it was viewed and evaluated on the basis of mechanical system. When we went to add the additional 33 wells, the rules had changed. The state started treating them as like water wells and started requiring concrete encasement. Now think about that, concrete encasement in case it ever gets a leak. They're 300 foot deep, plastic PVC, rigid PVC type tube, about 3 inches in diameter, with 1 inch of concrete around the outside. I'm sorry, 300 foot tube, 1 inch thick, is not gonna keep anything out. But what that did is it from a design standpoint, somebody looked at it and said, this will keep water from getting into the, or contamination out of the aquifer. Will it really? Probably not. But what it did add was cost. And it started to push that now to where if they continue down that kind of path and that kind of thinking of water wells are the same as geothermal wells, it's going to damage the ability to encourage people to do geothermal wells. So we more and more the public has to become educated on these topics. And that's a difficult one to educate the population on. And they got to speak up and they got to be heard and they got to prevent the politicians, I hope there's none here that I'm offending, from implementing what they believe are good ideas that are costly and contra to energy conservation.
That was very intriguing. So what kinds of things do you think are not cost efficient that perhaps could be policy issues going forward? Do you have any examples?
Yeah, I see some things that have just been implemented in the most recent code. And I know eventually we'll get used to them and they'll come down in cost. But right now, they're adding to cost and significantly, whether it's unfamiliarity or what on the part of trade contractors or general contractors or what, I don't know. And I'll give you an example. The new code calls for, and we're doing it in the new Taubman Complex building, code requires it now, the 2012 implementation. And you have automatic light turnoff. The minute the light coming in the building is sufficient in an area, lights have to go off in that area. You also have a criteria that says if the unoccupied space, when it's unoccupied, 50% of the outlets in a room have to go out. Lights have to turn off. You don't add all those features in there, and they don't work for everybody. For example, how do you have a laboratory conducting experiments that run 24 hours a day, outlets around the room, and you have to be careful which one you plug it into because you're relying on it being operational, and that when the building is unoccupied or the room is unoccupied for a given period of time, the power goes off. So it becomes a problem operationally. It becomes a problem cost-wise because when you do all those things to add, turn this off, turn this on under various conditions, you add to a thing called technology. Programmatically doing that, it's more wires to run, more sensors, more things to go wrong and need to be dealt with. So they're cost items that I think will ultimately diminish, but for now they're a first cost.
If I can add to that, Joe, in LaFontaine's facility in Highland, we did add some light sensors, a number of motion sensing light switches. let's call it voluntarily, not because it was a requirement at the time, but because it was energy efficient. And but it seems that, you know, I'll use the term smart regulation. I stop and think about, let's say you had an aquarium where you were raising fish, and 50% of the time the light, the pumps, the oxygen turns off? I don't think so. Yeah. So you got to, the regulatory folks have to be a little bit wise in their, you know, the safety regulations. I know were given to the, I worked for GM for 43 years, and they were given to the auto companies to comment on. They didn't always honor our comments, but at least they listened.
Right. And I think flexibility is the key, right? So they make sure that it fits the need of the business, fits the need of the use. One thing that DT Energy is doing actually right now, given the new code, is that we're surveying across the state to find out, first of all, are people aware of the code and what it is, and then what is the compliance with the existing code? And we're evaluating whether that could be a role that we could play in the future, is can we help educate people to know what the code is, and then they can, you know, really understand what to do. Are there missing pieces in the supply chain or the education? Maybe we can fill in some of those gaps so that, in fact, the code can drive efficiency in the future.
You know, that raises an issue of who's checking on all this.
That's right.
And now you find that the cities are not in position with their evaluation of the plans when they're submitted to know.
Right.
So now it's opened up, and it has for a while in the structural area, but now it's into the mechanical and electrical area. Entrepreneurial opportunity.
A really good opportunity.
For consulting.
Yep.
If you have those skills, to be evaluators of plans as a service to communities. It's gone a long way. And in 2009, the code changed, and it requires now special inspections in several areas by code for energy. Concrete has always been an issue, but they buried that one in there too. But now they got mechanical and electrical in there too. So now there's several companies that have started to add to their scope of services, allowing for special inspections. And you have to show the credential, you have to name the individual. We've got it for fireproofing, structural, electrical, and mechanical on a new building. On both new buildings, by the way.
It's interesting you talk about how they, with the motion sensors and all, I can just imagine what it's like with a college campus. If you're taking a test, that hopefully the professor's up and moving a little bit, or else in the middle of the test,
the lights go down, right?
Everything goes dark.
I know everything is based on payback, and I totally agree with that. Talk about solar and related to payback.
There isn't one, no. I think I'd throw out there that obviously we have seen the cost of solar come down over time. We're doing solar. We've got some programs for customer-owned solar. We also are doing utility-owned solar. If you drive down 96, you know, out to Lansing, and you see what was the Christmas tree farm, that's one of our big installations. And obviously it's something that can be a part of the overall solution, but the cost per kilowatt hour of that solar power is still higher than the cost from other generation sources. So that's my two cents of that. I don't know if there's any other solar experts up here.
Well, I do know that solar panels have become far more efficient. Mm-hmm. I mean, and every year there's been an increase. So you're going to see two things. It's just like the LED lights. They were very expensive initially, but as the quantity of production increases and the demand rises, that unit cost goes down. And so over time, I think that will occur. Mm-hmm. But I've seen the panels go from having to be almost vertical and only oriented actually 100% favorably during a very small portion of the year. And now they're getting to the point where they're going like this. Mm-hmm. They're flattening out, which makes them more available to solar direction than before. So that's adding to the opportunity for their efficiency. So slowly we're getting there. And it also depends on where you're talking about. You know, the climate, it's the severity here. Our snow last year, I think it would have been burying them quite a bit last year. So
Yeah, I think a lot of people like solar for other reasons than just the cost of it. I mean, I think they feel that it's an interesting thing to do. They like kind of the control that they've got the solar and are producing their own power. So there's other reasons to invest in some of these things besides just the cost. So,
good morning, Todd Gertis. Appreciate you all being here. My question is also solar related. In the sense of, I'm curious about La Fontaine. You said it was in your implementation plan, chose not to implement it initially. And then my kind of secondary question to all of you is, Michigan is generally regarded as, from a government standpoint, not financially supporting the solar industry as much as some of the surrounding Midwest states. And I'm just curious about your opinions as to whether you agree with that or disagree, and what do you see maybe Michigan legislature, what can we do out here in the audience to assist in that process? Thank you.
Let me answer first. The choice to not go with solar panels at the time the La Fontaine facility was built was purely a cost issue. They reached a point where they had set aside so much for, if you will, green improvements, and it just fell off the table. What they did do, though, is the ceiling, the roof is white and reflects heat, and you know that was an improvement from the standpoint of hydrocarbon coming out of the roof material and so on. But I was not part of the decision making process, but it was primarily financial in terms of initial cost. There were a lot of other things that were done that, you know, but if you're a solar fan, you say, well, why not solar?
So for me, we talked to a lot of customers, both business and residential, and the solar component is always a play. I mean, they always ask for, well, what if I can install solar panels in, you know, on my house or in my business? The problem is the cost, of course, right? The payback, they start looking at that, and then they don't even want to do the energy efficiency pieces that would, you know, decrease the load of your house or your business to allow solar panels to become a better business case for you. So part of it, I think, is the education. The energy efficiency is really foundational to all of the alternative energy that you want to overlay with it. And then the second piece is, you know, just having the right legislation to allow it to have enough subsidies. I mean, I travel to Windsor a lot. My mother's there. And I see a lot of solar panels and wind turbines. And it's because it's subsidized a lot by Ontario and the government. So a lot of that's happening for them in Windsor is that they know that they can get it, they want to get it, they know it's subsidized, and so they go for it. And I think right now in Michigan, we just don't have a good enough traction to get a lot of the subsidies that we need in order to have a compelling case for business owners and residential customers to really engage in that level.
I'm the efficiency person, not the renewable energy person, but obviously it's something that DT Energy is tracking. And I think for us, it's a balance. So if there is a subsidy, who's paying that subsidy? And we want to make sure that the folks that install solar get the benefits from it, but that doesn't mean that everybody that doesn't have solar is paying more to give them that benefit. So I think it's just a matter of balancing that out, and I think that the state, you know, does want to generate economic development from the energy changes that they're making, whether it's renewable or energy efficiency, but it's a balance.
I have no idea what the other states are doing. As far as what Michigan is doing, I can predict right now that they are not doing enough. And why? How can I say that? Because I have no idea what they're doing. I hear nothing. I know of no incentive that wants me to think about it. I doubt that if I don't, and I get close to these energy issues and LEED and what we're doing in buildings, if I'm not aware of it as an architect, how are you supposed to know about it? Right. And if you and I don't know about it, it says they're not doing anything.
Just a quick question. There seems like there's a lot of things that go into energy efficiency. Is there some kind of a checklist of different items that people should look toward so that they can, you know, what's the first thing that I should do as a residential customer or a business just to know the whole checklist of different things, you know, you need to be looking to for efficiency, you know?
I'll start with that, if I may. There are lots of checklists. I think you'll find a lot of things online. There's tools, and obviously it's going to vary by business type. But what generally I say to a business, 50% of your electric bill is probably from lighting. So start with lighting. It's an easy upgrade in many cases. We've talked already about, you know, so there's the newer technology, especially the LEDs, where the prices really come down. You'll find that the payback is really good. And there are other strategies besides just changing out light for light. There are the capability to put controls in to harvest daylight, all those sorts of things. All of those added together can really make a big difference. So we generally recommend, you know, start with something maybe that's fairly easy, quick payback, and then begin to look at the rest of your facility and, you know, chunk it off piece by piece.
Checklists are dangerous. And I'll give you two examples, okay? I'll use lighting as the first one, and we'll put it in a commercial area and or aesthetic area. You're familiar with spotlights versus floodlights, narrower beam, and you use them for accent. Now, I've seen it happen here on the campus. No one here from campus facilities this morning, so I'm safe. Where we had spotlights or something done intentionally for accent, be it color or spread of the beam. And an energy objective, they went in and took all those out and screwed in the little squirrely little ones, fluorescents, CFLs, okay? And what do I get? Blah. Color, spread, lost. Okay, so you lose some of what your objective was in the original design. You have to be careful where you do things. The second one is even more important, and we'll talk about residential construction. Homes, older homes. Now, the first thing a checklist usually tells you is watch for infiltration. Cut out all that leakage, because that's where you have the highest energy loss. And I agree with that. New homes today run a duct from the outside to the furnace for combustion air. Mm-hmm. Old homes didn't. They relied on that, in effect, without intentionally doing it, they relied on getting that infiltration in. That's how they got a clean blue flame. That's how you burn efficiently. Now you tighten up an old house so that you have no infiltration, start the furnace, and now you burn inefficiently. But, you know, those furnaces are very, very smart. They know that you sealed up all those cracks, but they found a way in. They know you didn't close the chimney if there's a fireplace.
Yep.
Now, I know of a house in Troy, I happen to have lived in it once upon a time, where somebody afterwards went in and sealed up the house real tight and couldn't get the odor out of the house and wondered what it was. It was that lining that comes from burning in the chimney, and that odor was that air was coming down when the furnace ran and caused odor in the house. Again, you have to know when you solve one problem, how do you prevent another one? Watch out for checklists.
That's why you call people like us, right? Walker Miller Energy Services is your answer. For residential, it's really important to have an energy auditor analyze your home, utilizing, you know, the equipment that's necessary in order to prevent issues like that. Because the blower door equipment, the CAS testing, the health and safety testing will really be your backstop in order to know that, you know, you're not sealing up your house too tight in such a way that you're having carbon monoxide emissions inside your house, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing on your commercial side. It's why you have to have professionals at some point in time that you're going to have to engage in order to make sure that your, you know, energy efficiency improvements are actually going to be meaningful and, you know, healthy and safe for you.
You know, there's a lot of people out there that are trying to be entrepreneurial. They're starting up businesses and jumping into these areas and offering things and at good prices that get very attractive and maybe causing you harm if you're not careful. So if the deal sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Any other questions? The new Lawrence Tech building being opened in downtown Detroit, are they utilizing any of the new green technology?
I actually don't know the answer to that. The new building on Willis and Woodward, for example, we've not been close at all to the construction of the building itself. I know it has to comply with the new regulations and laws that have gone into effect, in this case, since 2009, which wouldn't be the very latest. They wouldn't be bound by the new 2012 code. But they still have energy requirements. So what they've done in the buildings, I don't know.
We've talked a little bit about the geothermal. We talked about LED. What is the next generation? Or are there other things that, as business leaders or even homeowners, that, you know, technologies that might be on the cusp? Or are some of these technologies that we've been talking about today, are they continually being refined and improved? That's something that we should still be able to look at if they're, you know, looking to retrofit, be able to, their business or home.
I'll take a stab at that because I was actually just researching it last night in preparation for this panel. Really, what's trending right now is, of course, controls, right? You see it on the rebates, and then you see it on the new design and build. They're putting a lot of controls that's on the ASHRAE standards in terms of making sure that you're controlling what you're using, right? And then to overlay on top of that is really a new trend, I think, that's going to start happening is retro-commissioning. It's fine-tuning what you already have and making sure that the systems that you do, that you did pay for, that's supposed to be energy efficient, is in fact efficient after it's been installed.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Melanie. I think, and for the homeowner, it's often referred to as the connected home. How do you have control, maybe from your smartphone, to turn your furnace down, your air conditioner, your lights, of course, then your garage door, your security, and all that, too. But I think you're going to see much more of the equipment for homes and businesses being able to be controlled and being connected one to the other. And I think that's going to really help in the future.
Areas that we're discussing, geothermal, solar power, wind turbine. Now, if in fact some of the subsidies were ever made available in Michigan, I know there are certain neighborhoods that every house would have a solar panel or a windmill. Can you see that being a benefit, say, into some of the Detroit or Southfield homes, with each and every home having that type of power access?
Well, I let me take one shot at that, a little bit of one anyway. I think it's possible, yes. When geothermal, let me use an example. When geothermal started, we had a lot of calls from people when we did our building here for student services. We had a lot of people that wanted to come see it, talk about it. We had people that wanted to aggregate their homes, four homes right in a row. Could they do a geothermal well that would serve all? So you saw people trying to combine to make it more cost effective, or when they found that a single well, a couple of hundred foot deep, would be more than one house would need, well, why not split the cost with a neighbor? Maybe he wants to do it too. So could every house do their own? Yeah. I don't know how practical that would be in the long run, but I saw a downriver community, and I'm just escapes me for a minute which one did it, but they did a community well system for a small geography within the city that they put it in as a supplement to what they were doing. And I don't remember if it was Brownstown Township or one of those down there. I don't recall which one. But they did a trial on that. I don't know the results of that, how many people went tied into it or not. But I think you'll find more of that kind of thing happening than people making the investment in some forms of energy to do it individually, house by house. Windmills, every house having a windmill. I don't know if that would be a practical thing to do.
Every farm has one, but
yeah, well, a little more acreage there.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to bring it right back to Detroit, because a couple years ago we actually worked with the Detroit Land Bank Authority alongside the Neighborhood Stabilization Program and performed a study in the Boston Edison area, which is one of the NSP neighborhoods, in terms of how practical would it be to actually employ some district-wide, district-wide geothermal and solar panels on those homes. And then to also make sure that they're, you know, we looked at neighborhood LEED certification for the Boston Edison area, because there is money from the NSP funding to actually do all of those great things and socially responsible things that the neighborhood wanted to do for, you know, for that district. It became cost prohibitive, unfortunately. And I think it's probably because of the size of the homes. It was way too big. It's like, you know, you're playing with 3,000 square feet homes, you know, for that neighborhood, and doing geo and solar panels and the right sun, like in terms of a north facing and south facing. It was just an issue for that particular neighborhood. So I think it's possible with the right funding for neighborhood districts to actually adopt something that's going to be renewable energy. But again, the foundational piece really exists from energy efficiency. It's getting that piece done right and then overlaying it with renewable energy.
Yeah, I would say that there's definitely a trend across the country in looking at microgrids, whatever the generation source, but trying to do it more locally for stability, for, you know, for as generation changes. So I think there's a lot of work being done. Yeah, I think the costs aren't there yet, but more to come on that.
A couple of you have talked about the entrepreneurial opportunities, and I'm just curious what kind of training exists today, like maybe specifically at what does Walker Miller do to train a new employee so that they're qualified to do the work that they're doing, and you know, maybe is there anything that started at Lawrence Tech from a class standpoint, so that unqualified people don't make it in and there's not misleading things. Any comments on that?
Sure. 4 years ago, when we knew that we're going to need some BPI energy auditors, I had to travel to Chicago to get us certified to become a BPI analyst. Today, we've solved that problem. Walker Miller Energy Services is actually a BPI affiliate, so we provide trainings for our workforce, as well as you know, other organizations' workforce, in case they want to be BPI certified. On the commercial side, we've helped our team members become certified energy managers through a Association of Energy Engineers training. There's an online class that they offer, as well as live classes also in Chicago. That's the closest one that they've offered it so far. And I know Lawrence Tech also has some certified energy manager classes postgraduate, right?
Actually, I'll have to play dumb for a minute, and I'm not clear on which ones are certified offerings or are not for managers. What we have is basically a curriculum that leads to college degrees. And in that curriculum, we have course content that deals with all of that subject matter. Now, that doesn't stop people from coming back and going to school or starting school and taking courses in a curriculum. But when you register to come to Lawrence Tech, you're here for a degree program. Okay, we have architectural engineering, which deals heavily in that arena of energy. It's based around energy conservation. The College of Architecture has a curriculum that has embedded in it several course offerings that deal with nothing more than energy conservation, whether mechanical, combination mechanical, electrical, architectural design itself. I'll give you an example, just in a design. You know, in design, we talk about solar energy and we think solar panels right away. Well, you don't need to have solar panels to take advantage of the sun. You can take advantage of windows that allow sun in to heat a surface that takes the heat sink, they call it, and embodies it, that energy in that, and then subsequently radiates it off over slowly to warm space, and then when you don't want it, you close the shades, whatever kind of shade they be, so that you're not running that heat into the building in the summer. You're using it in the winter. So there are other ways to use solar, and we teach all that sort of thing embodied in the content that we do offer. The thing that we rely on are the trade institutions out there. We outsource our property management to a company called Aramark. Now, they have a training program that makes sure that their people that work for them know how to operate the systems efficiently. Because if you put a system in, and I'm thinking commercial now more than residential, commercial or industrial, if you put it in and don't operate it right, it's all for naught. You're not going to get your payback. You're not going to save your energy. I don't care what your objective was. You're not going to do it. And it's hard to turn people around who've always done things one way or expect to, or the person who says, I don't like to wear sweaters and I'm cold. Can't you turn the heat up? And people respond to that. We have to learn to say no. We're at 68 degrees. Put a sweater on. We have to learn to do that, and so we have to learn to operate them right, we have to learn to maintain them right, and we have to rely on the industries out there that supports those endeavors for people in those trades.
Is there anything that DTE, do they partner or have classes or have some certification that...
Absolutely. I would echo what Melanie said. When we started these energy efficiency programs, there were not BPI certified auditors in the state of Michigan, and that was one of the first things that we had to do with partner to bring in the training to get folks up to speed. One of the purposes of the energy efficiency law or the energy law was to spur economic development here in the state. And so DTE Energy does not go out and directly install in a business or in a residential. We do not do the audits. We hire local firms like Walker Miller, like DNVGL, to hire people to get trained and to go out and do this work. So I think that's really the opportunity, and some of our implementation contractors have really talked about taking folks that were blue collar and turning them into green collar, and that's what we really want to see happen, and that's going to bring in the skills, whether it's building operator training that we provide or the BPI, bring those skills up so that they can do the jobs and go out there and get the energy savings.
Now, Joe had mentioned something about the unique ways of using solar. Ford, when we spoke yesterday on the phone, you talked a little bit about how the windows at LaFontaine, at the new dealership in Highland, really utilizes that. And actually, could you talk a little bit about how LaFontaine harnesses the sun?
It's interesting that this kind of spun around to that point, but when they designed the building, the architects, all the south-facing windows are tall. They go almost all the way to the ceiling. And by measurement, 75 during the day, 75% of the light for the people in their work areas is natural light coming through the windows. And through, we have 52 skylights, we have 31 solar tubes. We've got a lot of natural light sources. And I told Ed yesterday that even in our parts department, we have a mezzanine floor that's graded so that the skylights and ceiling lights in the upper level shine through to the lower level, so you need less fixtures in the lower level. But all of the sales consultants' offices in the Cadillac part of the store are glass so that they get the light from outside. They don't have to have as much light overhead. So that's what we do.
You know, this is going to sound like it's anti-solar, but it isn't. Again, you have to be careful of what you do. The way you're using it there is excellent. That's the right approach to using it. Now, you know, we learn from our mistakes, right? So there's benefit to making mistakes as I tell you this story. We built the Student Services Center, and we have two-story glass atrium area looking for daylight to penetrate the building so they've been adequate for more than 50% of the depth of the building for illumination when the sun is out without artificial light. And then we set people, and by the way, that glass faces south. And it's two-story, and we have people sitting in there talking to students coming up to a help desk. And they're sitting low, and they're talking to somebody, so their angle of vision is up to somebody standing there, what I would call a deal counter, like you have in a bank. So what happens is, as somebody comes up and then goes away, the people are looking up, looking down, looking at a screen, and their iris is going like this. And you get fatigue. So you have to be careful where you're doing that kind of lighting, how you're using the sun, and you don't face people into it. Now come one step further into the building, and we laid out workstations with a consultant. We didn't do it ourselves. I don't want to take blame for this or ownership. But then we did it in a way so that they had their back to that problem. Wasn't that nice? So that they don't have to look at that sun to the south. I thought that was great. But when their back is to the sun, where's their screen? In front of them. And what do they got? Glare. So what do? We put things on all the windows around their cube and everything in order to block the sun so they can see their screen. And now the lights come on. So be careful, be careful. Don't try to deploy everything just because it sounds good. Make sure you're thinking of how you're going to use the space. Okay?
Well, we all know that wasting energy is wasted money. And we said it was going to be an hour this morning, so we're wrapping up on near that hour. So I don't want to waste anybody's time and lose out on money on sales and everything else. But I'd like to open up just for our panelists. Any final thoughts on our conversation today or pearls of wisdom you'd like to leave for our audience?
I was going to make them a checklist, but I think I'll get in trouble if I do that. So actually, the only other thing that I would add is that we did talk about investing and designing right, but there are things that you can do that are low cost, no cost, right? It's behavior. Are you turning out the lights when you're leaving? Are you making sure that your systems are coming down when somebody's not there? Are you optimizing for the season? You know, we're about to go into the fall. Are the filters clean on the heating system? Is it tuned up? So all of that sort of thing. So there are small things that you can do for no cost or low cost, and I would encourage you to, again, start with that at the top of your checklist.
All right. You know, 70%, I'm told, of the energy consumed in the country is in buildings, just operating the buildings. 40% of the energy is in residential alone that's consumed. So you wonder at times, is it worth doing any of this? Is it worth talking about? Is this a fad? Is it going to go away? Is the carbon issue going to go away and its impact on energy or climate? I don't know. I don't know whether it is or it isn't. But the issue is not going to go away. We're going to be dealing with that. So we care about how we produce energy. Do you think the oil issue is going to go away soon? Any idea that you think that's good? How long do you think that material in the ground is going to last? Oh, it'll last maybe our lifetime and our kids' lifetime. But is it going to last forever? No. It's diminishing, folks. It's going away. And it's just a matter of how long is it going to take. So this problem is not going to go away. It's real. It's here to stay. We got to deal with it.
I'm really big on education, you know, making sure that an educated buyer is your best customer, right? I mean, we really need to be engaged and know what we're dealing with. And if we know that it's beyond our scope, then call somebody and ask for help. And that help doesn't always necessarily have to cost you, because, you know, helping is just part of the education process. So I encourage, you know, everyone to really get educated, because it is going to be here. It's an issue that we're going to be dealing with for us and for the next generation, and we need to deal with it today so that we could have a sustainable future.
My thought is that you should really work to achieve a balance, and whatever you implement, whether it's residential, commercial, should be cost-effective. And I told Ed when he interviewed me yesterday that one of the things I thought when I first came to La Fontaine is that they had done all this energy conservation stuff as sort of fluff. But the more I delved into it, the more I understood it, the more I realized it's very practical. So be practical, balanced, and we'll use the oil sparingly as we figure out better ways to serve in the energy business.
We sure know Cadillac has some of the new energy efficient, even hybrid cars.
ELR?
Yeah. We can all come out and take a test drive, right?
Sure.
Okay, great. This is one last call. Request if anyone wants to put their business card in for a drawing for a $25 gift certificate to Ray Wiegand's to help get yourself ready for the fall. Everybody has entered? Do a quick drawing here. Okay, let's see. Great. And let's see here. Okay, we got Andrew Howell. Is Andrew here? We got his address. We'll send it out to him. Great. Again, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Lawrence Technological University, AAA, Comerica Bank, Raymond James of Birmingham, and Walker Miller Energy Services. And, of course, most importantly, we'd like to also thank our panelists here. I hope that everybody enjoyed it and take some time, you know, maybe to take a tour of Lawrence Tech, you know, speak with Vicki here, or visit the DTE website to learn more about how to become more energy efficient. Head out to La Fontaine and see how they redefined how a dealership could be energy efficient, plus providing the best cars, and maybe take a couple off for a spin and help fuel our local economy with one of our big three here. And then obviously talk to Melanie about it with your business, get some ideas on how, if you wanted to refresh and enhance your energy efficiency within your buildings, get some ideas and have them come out and do a consultation. Really appreciate everything that you were able to provide here. I learned some stuff. I hope the folks in our audience did also. And, of course, if you enjoyed today's program, please make plans to attend our next Leaders and Innovators event on October 9th, right back here at Lawrence Technological University, when the topic is reinvesting in Detroit. Visit cbsdetroit.com to register for this next exciting event. Thanks a lot. Have a fantastic day. I appreciate everybody for coming.